Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
And welcome back to the First Cut Podcast here on CBS Sports. That's Kyle Porter. I'm Chip Patterson. It's Monday morning, and we've got a fan favorite. And I actually, Kyle, wanted to as we are celebrating the conclusion of the Wells Fargo, I want to ask about the being able to say like a fan favorite, but then like a golf fan's favorite. Because while our winner was not one of the 12, I just saw a huge outpouring of support from across the sort of golf diehard community. And so I hope I'm not pushing away any listeners or any fans, but man, it felt like this one was a win for the insiders. I'm not like talking smack in that, but like the people who really like grind on the web.com, who enjoy watching these players come and work their way onto the professional ranks, the players who aren't your Jordan Spieth or Justin Thomas, exploding right onto the scene. This was a win for the regulars.
Yeah, I think Max Homa is somebody who, you know, we talk a lot on here about guys like Rory and Spieth, not because they're great. I mean, also because they're great, but because they're incredibly like thoughtful about kind of the way they go about things, but they're thoughtful at a level at which most people never ascend to. And so when you get somebody like Homa, who has known kind of the depths of professional golf in a way that those guys sort of haven't, that thoughtfulness, he's thoughtful in the same types of ways, that thoughtfulness plays out in a much more relatable way. And I think that's the part that's really interesting to me, is that you kind of get inside the mind of somebody who has failed a lot and not failed in a, oh, I made $200,000 this month instead of 2 million, but failed in a sense of like, I only made 18 grand this year. You know, what's that like, you know, as an adult? And that's pretty interesting. So, and so to see him win, it's very relatable. I mean, in a real way, not in like a, oh, I can relate to Rory kind of way, but in like a real, like, this is, you know, kind of mirrors maybe our lives kind of way.
Well, I want to get you to sort of help the listeners who maybe didn't hear the broadcast on CBS get into Max Homa's story. But in his post-round press conference, you know, he was talking about pressure, and he said he was talking about the absence of pressure given everything that he's been through. You know, pressure was when he had to birdie the last four holes to be able to keep his professional status. You know, pressure was grinding, trying to avoid getting sent back to Q school. He said, Rory's never had pressure like that. He was like, I know Rory hasn't ever had pressure like that. Like, what is the worst case thing that could happen to me? You know, I go out here, shoot an 80, or maybe I get a quadruple on the last and end up finishing second. Like, that's all great. And the perspective that he showed in the explanation kind of speaks to what you're saying there, that he has been through some stuff to arrive here at this moment at Quail Hollow.
Yeah, so Homa was he played at Cal, won the NCAAs back in, I think, 13, I believe, is when he won it, the individual title. And for the last 6 years, he's basically been up and down between the web tour and the PGA tour. And, you know, he's made 1.5 mil in that time, but had, I mean, which sounds like a lot, right, over 6 years. But the amount of money going out for these guys, it's also significant. So it's not, I don't think that, I think that money is more like regular person money than it sounds like, even though it sounds like a big number. And he's had some, you know, 2017, he plays 17 PGA Tour events, misses 15 cuts, makes 18 grand on the year. And you're like, well, what, you know, and he had a great quote. I pulled this quote. He was on the No Laying Up podcast, and I used this quote in my story because it was so good. He said, during that time where he missed the 15 of 17 cuts, he said, look, if this takes 4 years, it takes 4 years, but I'm not going to waste a day, an hour, or a minute not trying to get better. That taught me to get my attitude to be so much more positive, because I realized if you're playing that bad and you're also thinking negatively, they don't go together. I had to lie to myself and say, today's the day, dude. Today's the day we go shoot 65 and everything breaks apart and this starts to go in the right direction. Every time I thought I hit rock bottom, I found a shovel and dug a little deeper. It was shocking. I would come off golf courses in shambles, just mentally like, maybe I'm not supposed to do this. Then I'd be like, all right, wake up in the morning, I'm going to practice. I'm very, very proud of myself for doing that. It was really hard. And I thought that was such, it's so good. And if you can get on the other side of it, like if you can come out the other side of it, you're very different for having like seen kind of the bottom of it. And nobody wants that, right? Nobody wants to go through that, but you're a different player and maybe even a different person for having gone through it.
100% different person, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, I think that any sort of fall or suffering in life like that completely changes like who you are as a person.
So how does Max Homa's story, does it serve as a motivation for some of the players that are out there in the middle of that grind, or players who are finding that low point, digging a little bit deeper and deeper? You know, is that something where we as fans and as people who are following the sport, you know, how do we balance enjoying and celebrating these stories with also the intrigue and the interest and the demand that comes with some of the bigger stars on the PGA Tour?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think it serves as a reminder that like so golf is, we talk about this all the time, it's so much about just having a couple things go your way, right?
Right.
Like he made, here's the tweet that you're, or the thing that you were talking about from last year. Last year at the final event on the web.com tour prior to the web.com finals, Homa shot a 74 in the first round. He was T125. At the turn of the second round, he was T112. If he would have missed the cut, it would have meant missing the web.com finals, where he finished in the top 25 and got his PGA Tour card. So if he misses the cut at this final regular season event on the web.com tour, then he's out. He goes back to Q school just to get on the web.com tour again. So he shoots a back 930 in the second round of this last event, birdies the last four, also had an eagle, and then went on to the web.com finals, where he finished, I think he finished 15th at the finals, and the top 25 get their card. So, you know, if he doesn't shoot that 30, then, and that's what I'm talking about. It's one set of nine holes that literally changes your life. But you can't have that if you only, you can't get to that nine holes if you don't play, if you don't keep plugging away for years and years and years at a time. And I know that sounds crazy, but like that's sometimes quantity leads to quality. And that was the case for Homa. He just kept going. And there was a great quote from Martin Trainer. This was on golfdigest.com, who he won Puerto Rico earlier this year. And he said, you got to be a little bit delusional to pursue a career in professional golf. And I think that's true for most guys, maybe not DJ or, you know, guys like that. But for the Max Homas of the world, you got to be a little delusional. And like he said, you just kind of trick yourself into believing and thinking that you can do it and you're one of the best. And then, you know, sometimes eventually you will be, you will get there. So I think that's it's a cool story of keeping your head down and just continuing to grind out quantity and hoping that the work you put in someday leads to quality.
Where do we stack up? You know, from the other side of this, where do we stack up the birthday boys' performance? Because there's, I mean, there were shots and there were moments and there, I like, to me, there did not look to be, and you got your eyes on more of the tournament than I did, but as I was following it, checking in, turning it on, bouncing around, I did not feel as though I saw any one truly elongated stretch of golf where it seemed like it was the combination of Rory making all the right shots, getting putts to roll in, and catching breaks. It's like somewhere between the shots, the putts, and the breaks, there was always like one part of the equation that was slightly off.
Yeah, the first round was great. He has a putt for 65 on 18, misses it to shoot 66, and he's T1 after Thursday's round. But, you know, I thought his final round, the middle, so he had a stretch from holes 7 to 10, so those four holes, where he covered 1,900 yards in 7 shots with his driver and irons, and then 76 yards in 14 shots with his wedges and putter. So 21 shots total. He plays them in 3 over. And I just thought that was emblematic of kind of the way his weekend went. He was so bad around the greens. I can't remember how many strokes. He lost a lot of strokes around the greens. He was negative strokes gained around the greens over the last few days. And, you know, I mean, it feels like he played terrible, right? It feels like, wow, what's wrong with Rory? And he still finishes T8.
I would argue it's hard to say it felt like he was playing terrible. It felt like it wasn't going to click. It felt like it wasn't his week. And with his course history and with his 30th birthday, then there was a lot of attention and a lot of spark and a lot of excitement around him being there. But, you know, just like a lot of other sports when we watch, you know, sometimes in basketball, those shots just aren't falling, or, you know, things just aren't clicking for any other sports team. It did not feel after the Thursday round, whenever I was tuning in at least, that it was like, oh yeah, this, you know what? Rory's about to burn this sucker down again. It never felt like everything was moving in that direction.
No, I agree. And what was weird about that was he sort of started, like, the start was the part of the formula that for winning. Like, when he wins, he always plays, I mean, this is true of a lot of guys, but he almost always plays great in the first round. And he did that, and you're like, okay, well, you know, this is pretty easy to envision. But then just, you know, he was only 2 under the rest of the week after round one. Do you know what his average finish is in 2019, though? Like on leaderboards?
I'm going to go 6.5.
Wow, that's really close. It's 6.7.
Well, you didn't have that, and that's not in our show notes, but 8 of 9 top 10s gave me at least a window to guess at.
8 of 9 top 10s. The only place he didn't finish in the top 10 was Augusta. So, you know, it was a, for his season, it was a just an average Rory performance, which is, you know, he gained, I think it was 2.3 strokes per round at Quail Hollow, which would be the best number on the PGA Tour this year. If you kind of extrapolated that, I think DJ is number 2, the best non-Rory number. So DJ's number 2 on the PGA Tour with 2.3 strokes gained per round. So he basically was DJ for the season in this tournament. But it didn't feel like that because a lot of it happened early on Thursday.
Got it. And that's not strokes gained off the tee. You're saying strokes gained total. He gained more than 2 strokes against the field in this tournament.
Yeah. Yeah. Per round.
Yeah.
So 6 of the 8 though, or 6 of the 9 came on Thursday in the 66. So it's a little, you know, you're sort of averaging some stuff out, but it was what I'm getting at. It was still a really solid performance, you know, a performance that if you did that every tournament, you would rank in the top 2 on the PGA Tour and strokes gained.
What were some of your other sort of notes or big takeaways from the action?
Jim Nance brought this up in the broadcast and I went back and looked it up. Jason Dufter made 71 feet of putts on Saturday and Sunday.
You know, you were talk about the confidence that it needs. I don't know if he's if Duff is like overflowing with confidence or if he has the most like sober understanding and view of his own game.
It does feel like both, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like he's not all the way to delusional because he doesn't seem like a golfer who lies to himself. Very much stays within his game, but when he's got it flowing, man, he's just that's he's got the Champions Tour game right now.
I mean, it's kind of incredible that he was even in the tournament. You make 71 feet of putts over 36 holes on Saturday and Sunday. It's not good. I mean, you're hitting it, and it's got to be just infuriating. I mean, it's almost an extreme version of Rory. Rory is a better putter than I think people give him credit for. DJ is a much better putter than people give him credit for. Duffner is a really bad putter, but he's a really, really good ball striker. Like the disparity is I think way different than like a Rory or a DJ that we sort of talk about when we talk about this thing. It's bad. I mean, and it's honestly like it's tough to watch at times. So that wasn't good. I thought Fowler had a good tournament. We're going to talk about Sergio here in a minute. I thought Fowler was great. He was my pick to win. Had a good weekend. You know, his average finish, I was looking this up. He missed the cut at the Players last year in May. Since then, he hasn't missed a cut worldwide, and his average finish is 17th. So he's like week in, week out, he's a top 20, top 15, almost a top 15 guy. And we only talk about the wins with guys like him, but that's a high level of consistency, and he's trending in the right direction going to Bethpage.
All right. And now it is time for Stock Up, Stock Down, brought to you by TD Ameritrade. And the focus for today's conversation is the man who went real low early, made a charge up the leaderboard, and it's Sergio Garcia. Sergio on a heater is a fun thing to watch, and especially when he starts out in one of these early groups that really kind of makes you rush to the stream, makes you pull up the PGA Tour Live. All of a sudden, you're seeing him charge up the leaderboard. Where are you at with Sergio right now? Because I feel like we've had him in the conversation for a lot of these major tournaments or bigger tournaments over the last week or so. We had all the fun with Sergio and Tommy Locks in the team play event. What's our stock reading for Sergio Garcia?
Well, it doesn't feel like that long ago, and it wasn't that long ago. End of last year, heading into 2019, where you're like, was the Masters it? Like,
is he cooked? Is he totally cooked?
Seriously, like, was that the finish line? Right? Was that like the thing for him? And now it's just, you know, you play out the string or whatever. He is quietly having a really, really impressive season from a strokes gained standpoint. So he's number 10 on the PGA Tour in strokes gained right now, which is, even for him, is really good. He usually finishes in the top, 25, 30, something like that. Let me read you the top 10 in strokes gained right now. So you got Rory first. He's 2.7. DJ second, 2.3. Then you get JT at 2.1. Justin Rose at 1.9. Then you have Fleetwood, Patrick Cantlay. Hello, Patrick Cantlay. Tiger Woods, Jason Day, John Rahm, and Sergio is 10th. So the company he's keeping right now, it didn't feel going into this year. Even at the beginning of the year, you had the Saudi Arabia thing. There's just a lot going on with Sergio. And now all of a sudden you look up and you're like, wow, Sergio is one of the best 10 guys on tour this year. So stock way up for me. I mean, I think that once you win that major and you're older like him, like, what does he have to prove? What kind of money does he need? But to keep grinding for guys like him and Rose and even guys like Rory and Ricky who are younger, who have, especially Rory, who's done everything. Like, do you really need to put in the time? Do you really need to put in the work? And Sergio's doing it. And so I think that's great. And he, he's going to be interesting to watch, I think, the rest of the year.
So I thought when he started getting in dust ups, that was the sign to me that it was about to go down. Like, I was like, ooh, Sergio, okay. Because when your game's in shambles, that's not the time to be, causing fracas, right? Like, that's not the time when you want to be all up in the headlines being talked about. But if you think it's about to come together, or maybe if it's one of those, like, self-motivating things, like, the spark just needed to be lit because, and I think I've mentioned this on the podcast before, but for the Sergio, because what was it? He won the Masters, and it was right before he was about to get married, right?
Right.
Then he has a daughter, I believe, names the daughter after the Augusta hole. But, like, basically, I look at this human being who has hit a career milestone that he's been striving for decades. He has, you know, locked up, a beautiful bride, and now all of a sudden he's got a family. And so I do have this window where I'm like, all right, I could absolutely see there being a literal, like, honeymoon and also a honeymoon period for your game. And so when he started, started getting a little testy, started getting a little fiery, I was like, wait a second, is this going to be like, okay, back from mental and game vacation, like, ready to regain form, ready to see what else we can squeeze out of it? Because unless I am unaware of something, I don't think that we've got Sergio on any of our, like, health watch warnings, right? I mean, does he have an injury history that I am unaware of? There are multiple years of major competition left for Sergio Garcia.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and I think that honeymoon you're talking about, if you look back, starting at the Masters last year when he made the 13 on 15 at Augusta, he goes MC at the Masters, MC at the Texas Open, 70th at the Players, MC at the U.S. Open. Then he goes T12, T8 at a couple European events. Then he goes MC at the Open, MC at the Canadian Open, T39 at the Bridgestone. You can't miss the cut there. MC at the PGA. That's not a good stretch.
Unless you're just trying to get back to your wife on the weekends. In that case, that's a lot more family time.
And then it started to pick up at the end of the year. But I don't know. I've been impressed with him this year. And we're going to talk a little bit more about him later. But I'm excited to see him at the rest of the majors.
Coming up after the break, the Brandel Chamblee Brooks Koepka rivalry has another interesting twist. About that next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
This is providing Brooks Koepka the foil, or like the enemy or the rival that he needed to sort of fill in the picture for the way that we talk about him and the narrative and the conversation, because the zero personality just works out a lot, is so very thin and lacks some depth that now, as Brooks Koepka's sort of role within the stuff that doesn't matter. We are talking about the things that don't matter, but that are very fun to talk about because we're gossipy like that. But like, this is providing, so it's making Brooks Koepka so much more of an interesting figure. And for that, I'm very, very happy.
I'm very, very happy as well. And this combines many of my favorite things: golf media, strokes gained, major champions, multiple major champions. It is, it's pretty great. And so what happened for people, if you're listening to this, you probably know, but if you don't know, Brandel Chamblee and Jaime Diaz, both of whom I really like a lot and I think are great, were on a podcast, and Brandel was asked like who can roll a Tiger, or even if like Tiger's the best right now. And he said, it's basically Rory and DJ. He said, in the aggregate, you'd have Dustin and Rory, who are the likely two who could hang with him. John Rahm still got a lot to learn, yada, yada, yada. Jordan Spieth's game has fallen off, so it's really only two players who could challenge him, him being Tiger. And he talked about Koepka at another point, and he tweeted this out afterwards, after everybody started talking about it. He said, I give Brooks his due, and I certainly have lauded him plenty in the past, but his overall game, strokes gained approach averages, is nowhere near as stellar as Rory's, DJ's, or Tiger's. So there's a lot going on here, and on one hand, he's right. I went back and looked up Koepka's numbers, and he's not a great iron player. I mean, he's good, but he's not great. His numbers the last 4 years: 65th in approach shots, 97th, 91st, 67th. That's okay, you know. And if you throw in the driver, it gets a little better. He's 19th last year, strokes gained tee to green, 42nd, 37th, 33rd. So that's, you know, it's good. It's not the profile that you would expect from a 3-time major winner, right? So, but there are two things that strokes gained don't take into account. And those two things are, one, it doesn't count all the majors. So like the Masters is not included in that because it's the PGA Tour is keeping these stats and they don't keep it for the Masters. I don't think they keep it for the US Open or the Open Championship either.
Oh.
And so when you take that into account, and the fact that Koepka has basically said like, I struggle to concentrate at non-majors, I think you get a little bit of like, you know, in Brandel's generation, everybody, I think, cared the same amount for like everything. Like they certainly cared about majors more, but they cared about the, you know, whatever, the John Deere a lot.
Mm. The football coach in me just loves to hear that. Right. Every game on the schedule is the biggest game on the schedule.
Exactly. But it's different. It's a different generation. There's more money to be made, whatever. And Koepka's like, I think if he could, he would play the Tiger 4-major schedule. I mean, legitimately, he's basically said like the non-majors don't keep my attention. Like I just get whatever, you know. And so I think we can get two stats. I do this. We can get two stats heavy and say, oh, well, look at the strokes gain. Look at the strokes. And I think that Brandel's right. Certainly, there's some truth in there. Like he's kind of doing the Jason Day thing, where the strokes gain overall numbers look good because he's been putting really well. But that is not necessarily indicative of a long term great career. But then also on the other side, like Koepka's, you know, some of those major numbers aren't in there. And he certainly, I think everybody would agree that he elevates his game at the majors in a way that most other, you know, most other players don't. So the whole thing is pretty fascinating. And it's going to be, look, it's going to be a storyline at the PGA, at the U.S. Open, at the Open Championship, and you know, maybe beyond that. Who knows?
And anecdotally, I feel like in either the U.S. Open, the PGA, or both last year, one of the places where Koepka really elevated himself and put the tournament away was with approach shots.
At which one? PGA?
I couldn't remember with which one of those. So that's why I was throwing it to you, because I feel like that was one of those, you know, everyone's trying to see, everyone's going back and forth. You're looking all over the course. You're trying to see who could be able to catch him on the leaderboard. And every single time that, you know, he's sitting there with his second shot, he was just not making mistakes and putting it in the middle of the green or setting himself up. That's an elevated level of play for sure. And I would say that elevated level of play on approach shots feels like something anecdotally, again, I would have to look it up. I guess is Data Golf our only way that we'd be able to obtain the information for strokes gained approach from some of the, like the U.S. Open last year?
I don't even think they have it.
Yeah,
I think it's proprietary. So like the USGA I don't know. There's different play. It's like the dark web to get strokes gain approach at, like, you know.
But that
Port
was
Rush
it was that was like
Shinnecock.
The relentlessness of the competition and him being able to close out a championship. I remember that part of his game not being a weakness.
Yeah, and so Shane Ryan and Mark Brody did this thing on Golf Digest last year, where they looked at strokes gained. So you can look at strokes gained overall, because strokes gained is just like how you did compared to the rest of the field. The problem is you have to have lasers out there to determine, like to break it down into putting, off the tee, all that stuff. So anyway, if you look at overall, you and I can go, if we just get a spreadsheet, we can get that number. And Mark Brody and Shane Ryan went and did who elevates their game the most at majors compared to non-majors. So like, not necessarily who is the best at majors, but who is the most different at majors, for better or worse. So I looked at data from 14 to 18. So this was the last 5 years before 2019. Brooks Koepka at non-majors gained 1.5 strokes per round on the field. That's
really good. Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. At majors from 2014 to 2018, he gained 3.06 strokes per round on the field.
And if you listeners will remember the note from earlier, what'd you say the leading per round strokes gained is right now on the PGA Tour actively, like 2.3?
Rory's at 2.7. DJ's second at 2.3.
Yeah. And that's over three for Brooks Koepka.
3.06. Jordan Spieth, get this. Jordan Spieth at non-majors, from 2014 to 18 was at 2.4, which is sick.
Right.
It's just unbelievable. At majors, he was at 3.2.
I mean, 15 was stupid.
Yeah, it was silly. So anyway, the point there is that Koepka ranks number one on that list. Hunter Mahan second, which is crazy. Xander Schauffele, David Lingmer, Steve Stricker are all up there. So the point for me is that the data right there says he just simply plays better at majors than non-majors. And a lot of that data on a granular level, off the tee, approach shots, all that stuff, is just not included in the numbers that Brandel's looking at. And I think that deserves to be mentioned. Whatever you make of it, I think it deserves to be mentioned.
Time for the stat of the day.
Kyle, what's our stat of the day for this Monday?
Yeah, you ready for this?
Ready.
We're going back to Sergio. Well, I shouldn't have given you the answer. So I got curious after last week. We did who's the best at majors since 2018.
Right.
And I wanted to do who's the worst. I don't know if I did that. There's a number of ways you can do that. But the most consecutive cuts missed at major championships belongs to Sergio Garcia. And that's like, I'm saying there wasn't a break. Like, I'm not saying like so-and-so missed one in 2017, missed one in 2013. Like, if you only played in six majors ever and you missed, I'm not including you. Like, I'm just doing the last five. So Sergio's missed the cut at every major since the beginning of 2018, all five of them. He made the cut at the 2017 PGA Championship. So the longest active streak of missed cuts at majors actually belongs to Sergio, which is kind of crazy, right?
Which is the playing like one of the 10 best players in the world right now.
Exactly. And so I guess one of my questions is, for you, who do you think is second on that list in terms of most missed cuts since the beginning of 2018 at major championships?
And it doesn't need to be consecutive. You're just saying like most missed cuts, period?
Yes. Sergio's missed all of them. So he obviously has the most consecutive. But who is second in terms of most missed cuts?
Graham McDowell.
I don't know if he's played in like one maybe.
Oh. I didn't know former major champion status still had him in the mix. Can I get a clue?
You're on the right track in terms of international or American.
Tyrrell Hatton.
No, that's a good guess. So we're going with two other former Masters winners.
Charles Schwartzel.
Yes.
And who would the other one be? Is it no, wait. Who's the other one?
Danny Willett.
Oh, yeah. Danny Willett ain't out here burning it down at major championships.
So they've both missed four cuts at major. Now part of this is like, okay, so you do have to qualify. Like, so there's you're playing somewhat good golf just to get in these events. But then once you get in, you're not playing great. So that's sort of the other end of the spectrum. I can't imagine Sergio going with the Sergio Slam again in 2019 after he missed all four cuts in 2018. I can't see that happening with the way he's playing right now. But who knows? We'll see at Bethpage here in a few weeks.
What is his Bethpage history?
That's a good question.
We can save that for another leaderboard. Maybe we'll hit that at leaderboard look back if we can find it.
Yeah, I got it right here. So 2002. So what am I looking at? 2002 U.S. Open. He finished fourth. He finished in the top 10 in all four majors that year. And then 2009 U.S. Open. He finished T10. Yeah. How you feeling about that?
I think I'm starting to zone in on some of my golfers to back for the PGA.
The irony of Sergio is that for, you know, 19 years, his MO was like super consistent at majors, doesn't miss cuts, but doesn't win. And then for the last 2 years, his MO is misses all the cuts, but he also wins.
I love it. All right, let's do some over-unders. Max Homa, career wins. He has one now. I will set that over-under at 2.5.
I will go... That's a good number. I will go over.
It's hard to win.
I think Homa's somebody who... The talent's there, right? Like, his pedigree is really good. Winning the NCAAs, Walker Cup, great at Cal. I think he's somebody who's so controlled by attitude and by just the way he feels about things. And, you know, this will give him a ton of confidence. So, yeah, I'll go over. I'll say he wins three times.
End of the season, Brooks Koepka's are we doing strokes gained total or just strokes gained on approach shots?
Strokes gained total.
Strokes gained total. End of the year ranking, it will either be higher or lower. I'm going to say higher or lower than 14.5.
You're looking at the numbers that I gave you. So the last 4 years, he finished 12th, 13th, 12th, and 15th. And see, this is where his putting in a short game, which is super underrated, helps him. Because we already talked about how he's kind of average on approach shots, but he's helped by his driver and he's helped by his putter. I will say he is farther away from, like, I'll say he's over that.
Or lower.
Say he finishes like 20th or 25th.
I was thinking that it was going to be lower than recently because it doesn't seem just, again, like kind of looking at the moving pieces, raw talent and previous results aside, it doesn't feel like he is, it's strokes gained against the field. I don't see him running away from the field right now. So I could see that. I could see it being more in the 15 to 20 range by the end of it.
Yeah. It's a good number though.
And then Rory McIlroy, top 10s in 2019. So he's got 8 of them so far.
Yep.
He's got probably 8 events left.
Well, are we going PGA Tour only, or are we throwing European? Because he's going to play the back end of the European Tour probably.
Ooh. That'll be after the Tour Championship type stuff?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. Okay, well, yeah, let's do include it. And in that case, over under 15 and a half.
That's so many.
Dude, Rory walks into a European Tour event. He steps to the first tee of a European Tour event later in the year. He should be top 10.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's what he's doing right now on the PGA Tour.
Right. But I'm trying to think, is like, could he double up his top 10s? Because I could see him getting 4 or 5 more top 10s on the PGA Tour / majors this season, right? Like, I would set that at like 4.5 more. That'd be 12 and a half or 13 as your over under. And then I'm going to tack on like 3 more.
I think there could be some regression with his putter. I think he was like 35th or 30th in putting, so 40th maybe. I don't know. He might be lower than that. But, I mean, you look at Wells Fargo and you're like, I mean, I watched a lot of it and it's like, was he even playing that great? I don't really feel like he was that good. And he still finishes in the top 10. So, I don't know. I'll go over just because he's from tee to green. He's unbelievable right now. So I'll say over.
Over. Rory McIlroy, happy birthday. This is what we're saying. This is what we're giving you for your birthday here on the First Cut Podcast. It's a premonition of even more success. Congratulations.
A real big limb to step out on there.
Exactly. He is Kyle Porter. You can follow him on Twitter @KylePorterCBS. You can follow me @Chip_Patterson. Kyle, thank you very much.
Thanks, Chip.